Thanks for joining us on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain, with South Dakota State University Extension. This is episode one. Well, hey everyone again, I'm John McMain.
Yeah, hello, my name is Anthony Bly.
Well, Anthony, this is our first full official episode of the first series of Streamlines.
Wow, that's exciting, John.
I'm excited. This is something I've actually been working on for about the last year.
Takes a long time, don't it?
Apparently it does. I thought we'd be out sooner than this, but hey, we're getting this off the ground, getting out of the gate, and I'm excited to just start flowing downhill. So we're kicking off this season with a discussion of our theme. Our theme for this season is, of course, conservation drainage. And when you think about conservation drainage, what comes to your mind, Anthony?
You know, I think about drainage as getting rid of excess water, and conservation is the opposite. So, you know, retaining some of that, maybe for later usage, or, you know, maybe in some regards, conservation is related to putting it back the way you found it, cleaning the water up in a sense. I think we got to talk about that now. It's kind of perceived as kind of a negative thing in ag groups, but I really think we got to talk about it.
I agree. And it's interesting. So we had a conservation drainage workshop back in 2018, and one of the comments from someone, they wanted to attend because they didn't know how you could have both conservation and drainage in the same conversation. So I think there's a perception, I mean, drainage is a very divisive issue, I feel like. And so there's a perception that you can't have both. You can't improve water quality and have drainage. But I think you really can. And so, yeah, I'm excited for this season to really get into the tools we can use and how we can manage water, but also improve water quality and all the benefits that come with drainage. To start with, we need to talk about tile drainage in general. What's good? What's bad? What do we think about when we think about tile drainage? You know, I count it a privilege in my position as an Extension State Specialist for Water Management in South Dakota that I get to work with many of the experts and leaders in this field from across the region, across the country. And, you know, we're going to hear from a lot of them during this season, different research and outreach and demonstration projects we're working on. But for this discussion, to kind of kick us off, we interviewed Chris Hay, Dr. Chris Hay, and I'll let him introduce himself.
I'm Chris Hay. I'm a senior research scientist with the Iowa Soybean Association.
Dr. Hay, Chris has a very long career looking at many aspects of water management. He was in South Dakota for 7 or 8 years and really did a lot of work in South Dakota to get practices in the ground and really raise the level of awareness about tile drainage in general and then about conservation drainage. And so the place I started with him was just asking him, what are the pros and cons of tile drainage? So Chris goes into some detail here about the two main benefits specific to tile drainage.
Two main benefits of drainage are getting rid of excess water out of the root zone. One, that creates better trafficable conditions, and so you get more good work days where you can get in the field a little earlier, get things planted. You're not hung up by too wet of conditions. You're not compacting the soil because the soil is too wet when you're trying to get in and have to mud in a crop. And so that's one of the big benefits. Another then is, again, by getting that excess water out of there, your crops need to get both air and water out of the soil. And so if they can't get enough oxygen out of the soil, unless it's rice, they can't take it from the air. And so they need a good aerated root zone as well. And so that benefits good root growth, good early crop development, so that crop gets off to a better start and you have a more robust crop as you head later into the season.
So we get an earlier start, we get a better start, and then we get kind of more consistent growth.
Gotta hate that mudding in a crop part.
Yeah.
That, boy, if we can get rid of that, that's really beneficial.
That term really stuck out to me, and that has a lot of implications for your soil quality.
Absolutely. I mean, porosity, you know, soil compaction is negative, and yeah, it just really sets up a good situation.
And so since I've been in South Dakota, there's a very distinct split between people that are always very much for tile drainage or very much against tile drainage.
I've witnessed that.
So tile does have, you know, significant benefits agronomically, can reduce erosion, in particular phosphorus loss, but like you mentioned earlier, Anthony, I think it is important that we acknowledge and discuss the potential negative impacts, because then we can do something about those.
Exactly.
So here Chris talks about, you know, some of the potential cons of tile drainage.
Probably the biggest negative is the water quality issue. And so as you're moving that excess water and taking it out of the root zone, you're also carrying with it nutrients that leach down below the root zone and then get carried out through the drains. And so biggest one typically is of concern is nitrate nitrogen. It's easily dissolved in water and wants to move where the water goes. And so it goes out with that drainage water. And so nitrate loss from drainage is a big concern. There's other areas where dissolved phosphorus is also a concern coming through the drains. So phosphorus in the dissolved state can move again with that drainage water, and that dissolved phosphorus is really highly bioavailable. And so a little bit of dissolved phosphorus can be a big water quality concern.
So yeah, there are potential water quality impacts downstream related to tile drainage, nitrate, orthophosphate. That's one that we don't think about as much.
Not as much, I know. Yeah.
But it can be an issue, especially like Chris mentioned in the Great Lakes Basin, Lake Erie.
Yes.
And so let's just walk through. We have tile drainage. We have a lot of benefits related to tile drainage for agronomic perspectives and soil quality and workability and a whole range of things. But then there's these potential water quality issues. And so enter conservation drainage. And conservation drainage then is a way that we can address some of these potential issues related to water quality. Chris, also expert in conservation drainage.
I guess my definition of conservation drainage is a set of practices that are designed to maintain the production benefits of drainage. And so namely the timely field operations and then a healthy aerated root zone for crop production. But then at the same time, address some of the environmental concerns of drainage and primarily water quality concerns.
And there's many different types of conservation drainage practices. I think one thing that people don't always think about is it's not just edge of field practices. I mean, we also have to think about nutrient management in the field.
Absolutely.
And that's where people with your background and expertise really come in and help this equation.
Soil testing, yeah. Nutrient levels, yield goals, big deal.
Yep. And so making sure what we put on matches what we get out, so we're not losing stuff downstream. But then there is this edge of field piece as well. So again, let's just check in with Chris, and he'll kind of go through the different conservation drainage practices that can help us address these water quality issues.
Using that definition of conservation drainage, you know, there's a number of practices that meet that definition of maintaining the production benefits, but also addressing the water quality concerns. And so that can include infield practices like 4R nutrient management, cover crops, extended rotations that either reduce the water leaving through the drains or tie up the nutrients before they get to the drains, converting areas of row crop production to perennial production. So again, that reduces or ties up nutrients before they get to the drains and also reduces some of the water leaving through the drains. And then probably what most folks think of when they think of conservation drainage then would be the edge of field practices. Some of the downstream practices that either manage the drainage water or actually treat the drainage water. So that includes things like controlled drainage, where we manage how much water leaves and when the water leaves the drainage system. So that one, hopefully we get both a production benefit as well as a downstream water quality benefit. And then practices like denitrifying wood chip bioreactors, saturated buffers, wetlands that treat the water, and then drainage water recycling, kind of a newer idea for conservation drainage, where we actually capture and store that drainage water and then reuse it for irrigation. Then, you know, looking downstream, we can also look at two-stage ditches, where we have some vegetation in the ditch in that second stage, and so we get some treatment of that water before it makes it out to the river stream system.
Certainly sounds like a lot of options there, John.
There are a lot of options, and the neat thing is they don't all only have one benefit.
Right.
Some like, you know, a bioreactor, it's specifically targeted for nitrate reduction. And so you're not going to get any yield benefits or, you know, improved soil health from a bioreactor. But a lot of these, I mean, it makes sense economically as well. It's that you're reducing your input cost, you're improving your soil quality. So you're getting multiple benefits.
Right. There's a lot of good tools there.
A lot of good tools.
They probably need to fit into the situation too.
I think that's a big thing. And I think we'll get into that somewhat, that not every practice is perfect. There's no silver bullet.
Right.
But a lot of times people see a limitation or a flaw in a solution as a reason to
discredit it,
to not put that practice in. But we need to change the paradigm, change our mindset to seeing that flaw as the starting point for innovation.
Absolutely.
So we look at a practice, it has a limitation. Let's not stop there. Let's use that as a starting point to then figure out how to make it work for our situation.
Yeah, there's all tools, all good tools, and technology is moving forward.
It is. Research for the win.
That's right.
Do you have any conservation drainage practices, infield or edge of field, that you've personally worked on?
No, not that I've worked on, but I've visited several of them. They're all really intriguing. I'm a soil scientist, had my roots in physics, soil physics. So water is a big part of that. I guess that's my interest.
So I haven't worked as extensively as Chris on a lot of these practices, but it's interesting because every practice that I pitch to, you know, a farmer or a contractor, there is always that hesitation. I think some of it is just unfamiliarity with the practice, but then I think we really get into the social science side of like what's prompting people to change, what's holding them back, things like that. What are the drivers and barriers for people to implement these practices? And obviously it changes based on personality and a lot of different factors.
There's a lot, you know, every farm is different, and owning the land and renting the land can be a factor, and land tenureship, and, you know, all of those things are interactions that come into play. So it's good to just have a good toolbox full of tools, and we have to just be able to give people the ability to pick the right one out.
Yeah, not prescribing things, but empowering people to figure out what works best for them and then helping them make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these things aren't going away. Obviously, you've seen all the trucks full of tile drain going up and down the interstate. It's all about education and understanding.
And I don't think water quality issues will go away either. And so, yeah, we don't want to get to the point where it is a regulation situation where practices are prescribed. So it's important to kind of get out ahead of these things. As we're doing more tiling or looking at tiling, we look at it in a different way that we address not just agronomic benefits, but potential water quality concerns, improve water quantity management of having enough in the summer, that type of thing. So
in some senses, I think there's a race to get things done sometimes, to get in ahead of any perceived regulations that might come. But I think we can have it all. You know, that's what everybody wants in the end. And so, you know, just knowing the tools and where to apply them, I think makes that so much more important.
So it's a good time for this podcast.
Oh, it's great time. Awesome timing, John.
Yes. So I pulled in another expert in the field, Dr. Yava Kjærsgaard.
My name is Yava Kjærsgaard. I work as a research scientist with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
And he has a really good perspective of why conservation drainage is useful and important. So I'll let him share that here.
So some of the conservation drainage practices have a crop yield benefit or agronomic benefits. Some of them might even have a positive impact that way, but they are primarily installed to reduce negative environmental impacts. They should be installed both out of an environmental stewardship perspective to show that agriculture, we're doing our part in help minimizing nutrient losses from crop production. And that might also help stave off potential regulation down the line. And we are seeing some increasingly vocal voices talking about the challenges that comes with nutrient losses from agriculture. And I think it is very important for us working in the agricultural community to get out in front of that. And also that many of these conservation drainage practices that they may have, there may be cost share available either from the NRCS or locally through soil conservation districts or other organizations that might be available or might have cost share available to help foot some of the bill for what the cost might be.
So being proactive, I mean, I think that's important to think about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of things that we can do. There's a lot of things that agriculture is doing that we're doing to manage water responsibly, effectively, considerate of what happens downstream. But I like how you said it, Anthony. We can have it all.
Yeah, it's just absolutely.
About thinking about the tools and applying the tools where they need to go.
Well, if people want to continue to eat, we got to be able to use our technology to increase productivity and expand usefulness of some of these soils. But at the same time, we have to take into account ecosystems and environments and things like that as well.
I mean, tile drainage gives us the ability to not have to take other lands or not have to put other lands into production.
Correct.
And so I think that's a consideration that we miss a lot of times. You know, most of these areas are already farmed.
Yep, they are. They're not, you know, I mean, that's not going to go away.
And so it's improving the yield and profitability on areas that are already farmed, working lands. And I think that is an important consideration.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a good win situation all around if we incorporate some of these conservation drainage practices, which I'm excited to hear about.
So let's jump into some of the limitations or barriers and drivers of conservation drainage. I asked Yaba about this, and this is what he had to say.
Let's start with some of the drivers. I think there is a lot of focus on conservation drainage practices. And also, we are seeing that several states, including Minnesota, but also Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and other states, at the state level have developed nutrient loss reduction strategies. And so that means that at the state level, there are efforts underway to reduce nutrient losses from crop production or from non-point sources. But what we are seeing from research is that the most effective practices for removing nitrate are these conservation drainage practices. And so therefore, there is a very strong interest in these practices because they are so effective. Some of the challenges are that, unfortunately, while they do remove nitrogen from the tile water, it is being converted into, for most of the practices, certainly saturated buffers and bioreactors, it's being converted into nitrogen gas. So it's being taken out of the water and it is being released harmlessly into the atmosphere. But it does represent a loss for the farmer that has to go out and buy nitrogen to replace what was lost. And so a challenge is to find ways to capture that nitrogen and then bring it back onto the field. Now, for a saturated buffer, you could harvest the grass or hay it or something and bring it back to the field. In that way, you would bring some of the nitrogen and phosphorus, for that matter, back up to the field. But again, most of it is lost to denitrogen gas to the atmosphere. So I think while the practices we have now, that they are well established and it's well documented that they work, I think the frontier we are up against is to find ways to actually capture that nitrogen and so we can reuse it. And that's where practices such as either controlled drainage or drainage water recycling comes in, where you are capturing the water and then you are bringing it back up onto the field. Both so you have the benefit of extra water if you are short of water later in the growing season, but also any nitrate that's in the water is being brought back up to the field.
And I think that's important to promote and maybe do more research on and demonstrate is these aren't necessarily just one-trick ponies.
No.
And we can get additional, you know, multiple benefits from these practices.
It's a complicated system.
It is a complicated system. So that, yeah, I think it's good not just to talk about the systems, but the why they work, because then that helps the farmer have an understanding of where it would work better or not.
Correct.
And so that enables them to think about where to put these systems in and how they fit in their operation.
Yep. I think that's important. Education and awareness is big.
I definitely do not want to be the person who goes out and tells someone to put something in and not have a clue about how it fits in their operation.
Right.
That doesn't help anybody.
No, that's just wrong. One size does not fit all.
I think it's a good stopping place. So that will wrap up episode one of the conservation drainage season. Conservation drainage, we have a lot to cover in this season, and I'm really excited to get into each practice. Today we kind of covered what conservation is, some of the different practices of conservation drainage, discuss some of the challenges and benefits with implementing these practices, and then kind of what we need to think about regarding tile drainage in general. Next week, you'll be able to catch part two, where we discuss other barriers keeping folks from implementing conservation drainage practices how we can look to overcome these barriers, and what the future of conservation drainage looks like. Thanks for joining us today on Streamlines. We sure had a lot of fun today. Hope you did too. If you want to learn more about anything you heard today, head on over to the SDSU Extension website. But for now, I'm John McMain.
I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time.